Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is shirt tail flappingly Marcus Freestone. And in this episode, we are continuing to look at social interaction, but specifically from the point of view of existentialism. Now, I know at that word, a lot of you will be going, oh no, I'm going to switch off now. I'm not going to be interested in this. Please don't. If you don't know anything about existentialism, then don't be put off. Yes, some of it is annoyingly academic and kind of wanky, but the sort of stuff I'm going to be talking about isn't, and it's all going to be relevant to your life as good existentialism should be. So it's not going to be a lecture, and we're not going to go into all the sort of ins and outs of phenomenology and all the technical stuff, because I find that tedious, frankly. The point of existentialism is that it's supposed to be relevant to the fundamentals of everyday human existence, and that's what this podcast is about as well. It's not about abstract ideas, it's about how we live in the here and now. So hopefully, even if you don't like existentialism or you don't know anything about it, please don't be put off. It's really interesting, and the good stuff is really useful, and it isn't all nihilistic and negative. Some of it is, but we're not going to talk about that. Okay. Consciousness is like gravity. Without a substantial physical world, it is weak and useless. Consciousness is nothing without objects of which to be conscious, just like gravity is nothing without large masses imparting power to it. A substantial aspect of our consciousness is what Sartre calls being for others. This is not only the way we behave and the things we say when in human company, which obviously differs from how we behave when alone, but also the way in which our innermost thoughts are coloured by the idea of other people. Guilt, shame, and embarrassment are emotions we only feel in reference to other people. Psychopaths do not experience these emotions because they do not acknowledge the thoughts and feelings of any human being but themselves. Hopefully, you all listening are not psychopaths, so the rest of this episode will be of supreme relevance. If you trip in the street and people are there to observe your clumsiness, you will flush with embarrassment. However, even if you are completely alone and unobserved, you will still experience embarrassment because the idea of other people is always in your head. You think, I'm so glad nobody saw me trip. That was embarrassing. But why is it embarrassing if nobody observes you? Well, the answer, folks, is this. Because the concept of the judgment of others is so deeply ingrained in us from childhood onwards, we would rarely think, nobody saw me trip, so I don't care. Even if the rational part of our brain might say that a few seconds later, our initial response is always still to feel embarrassed. The audience effect is a powerful psychological phenomenon whereby we often feel that we are being observed even when we are alone. This can lead some people to believe that some kind of ghost, spirit, or God is watching over them. Some people also experience the disturbing sensation that their own thoughts belong to some other entity and are somehow coming from outside of themselves. Add all this together, and it's tempting to conclude that we are never truly alone. Consciousness is also inextricably linked with time. Phenomenologists, please don't switch off. You don't really need to. If you're interested, Google it, but you don't really need to know what that means. Phenomenologists such as Husserl, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, or Sartre, would say that consciousness does not have a present moment, that it is always anchored firmly in the past or future. Sartre identified the state of anxiety at future self, something I constantly experience, basically worrying about things that have not yet happened. Conversely, of course, we also waste a lot of time worrying about things that have already happened, but no longer are. The exact nature of time is still somewhat of a mystery, but we do know that it is relative. Einstein discovered the time dilation effect. If you travel at close to the speed of light, you will travel forward in time relative to people traveling at normal speed. This has been proved by putting atomic clocks on a plane. The clock on the plane moved very slightly forward relative to the stationary clock on the ground. Maybe consciousness distorts time in the same way that gravity distorts space-time. And I'm not talking about quantum theory here and the, to my mind, anthropomorphic notion that our observations and consciousness affect the behaviour of matter. Rather, I'm talking about the relative nature of time. Okay, if you didn't find that interesting, maybe put a pin in it. I'm not entirely sure why I included that. Never mind. Let's move on. Let's come back down to Earth. You will know that, unless you concentrate very hard or meditate, it is almost impossible to be entirely present in the moment. I once meditated and managed to have no conscious thought for 15 minutes before I was interrupted by somebody noisily going up the stairs outside the meditation room, which was annoying. But usually we are bombarded every second by thoughts concerning the past and future, and little or none about the present. We can all attest to the fact that our perception of time is relative. When you were young, a school holiday seems to stretch out infinitely in front of you. When you reach middle age, those few weeks shoot by almost unnoticed. I'm sure you've all had the experience of not being able to enjoy a Sunday evening because you cannot take your mind off the fact that you're not looking forward to going to school or work in the morning. Well, the good news is that, with practice, you can manipulate your conscious perception of time. Existentialism is all about making choices, not avoiding choices, and exerting your free will, rather than being buffeted about by external circumstances and the will of other people. I have long thought that it's pointless thinking about a situation when you are not at present directly in it, and this is a very existential attitude to have. It is unproductive and a waste of precious time to worry about something you have to deal with tomorrow or next week, unless you are actively preparing for that situation or conducting a useful kind of mental rehearsal. Your thoughts do not affect anything except your own mental state. Worrying about something will not affect the problem at all. That requires physical action in the real world. Many people substitute mental angst for real world action. I have many, many times throughout my life. And this is the polar opposite of existentialism. It is only worth thinking about things that you can materially influence. I've wasted so much time worrying about what people think about me. I've experienced crippling guilt and shame over the opinions of people I will never meet. A true existentialist would never fall into that trap. So, to my example of how to consciously manipulate time. Years ago, I was doing a job I hated on weekday evenings. I found that from the moment I woke up in the morning, I was filled with dread about going to work, and it would ruin my whole day. One day, after a week off, I decided to make an effort. Rather than wasting the day thinking about my horrible job and the awful people I was forced to encounter there, I got up early and went for a long walk in the countryside. I forced myself to focus my consciousness on the present, the nice weather, the endorphin rush the exercise was giving me, and the sense of peace and freedom I was experiencing. When the job did come to mind, it was only fleetingly, and it didn't bother me. When I got to work that night, I had wrenched myself into a different perspective. I thought, this job only takes up a few hours of my day, and it leaves me free to enjoy the rest of my life. During work, I let my consciousness wander and focus on other things. There is no secret or great skill to doing this. You just have to think that's what you want to do and keep practicing. If you practice and concentrate, you can make a 5-minute break from work seem much longer, and the hours you are working seem much shorter. Time is relative, relative to consciousness. Children up to the age of 3 never lie because they think everyone else can read their mind. They haven't learned to distinguish between the thoughts in their head and external vocalized conversation. Even when we do appreciate this distinction, I don't think the idea of other people being inside our head ever entirely goes away. Why else would you feel guilty about something nobody else has observed? Because deep down in a primitive part of your brain, you think someone will find out. If you believe in a God, then you will feel guilty because God will know your thoughts. Indeed, thinking bad thoughts is a sin in Catholicism. But I find that notion creepy and terrifying. Okay, so how does existentialism fit in with social interaction? Well, freedom and making choices are paramount, and this obviously has enormous ramifications in our dealings with other people. Nobody can ever be said to be completely free. You can't just decide to go to the moon and make it happen. But that isn't the kind of freedom we're talking about. Nobody can entirely choose their circumstances or the people with whom they do or do not interact. But everyone has the freedom to choose how they react to their circumstances. At the most basic level, when confronted with a problem, you can choose to try to overcome it, to take action in the material world, or you can choose to give up and do nothing. In existentialism, doing nothing is always a conscious choice. It is not freedom to avoid doing things or avoid decisions. This is the very antithesis of existential freedom and authenticity. If you do not make choices and take control of your life, then other people or external circumstances will force choices upon you sooner or later. It is not possible for a human being to do nothing, and that is not one of the freedoms existentialism covets. We all need food, water, shelter, etc. in order to survive, and we have to do things and interact with the world and other people in order to survive. Existentialism is also not about being selfish and hedonistic and disregarding others. It should absolutely not be confused with people like Aleister Crowley and his spoilt child style of philosophy, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." He wasted his life and ruined his health with drug-fueled indulgence and ultimately achieved nothing. Becoming a heroin addict makes you a terrible existentialist. It's also not about constantly enjoying yourself or aiming for a life of constant joy and happiness. Existentialists would see that as a naive and unrealistic ambition. It's about being authentic and not slipping into bad faith. Bad faith is discussed in the free book and possibly in an earlier podcast as well. I can't remember, so sue me. But it's definitely in the book. An example would be not taking responsibility for a decision or pretending to yourself that you couldn't foresee that your decision would have negative consequences for someone else, or letting something happen by omission, by knowingly failing to take action. Doing nothing is not an option. Bad faith is essentially lying to yourself, and we all do it every single day. I'll just have 5 more minutes, then I'll get out of bed. I'll do the washing up in a minute. I'll just reorganise my DVDs first. I'm not bothered what they think of me. I don't care. Even as we are saying these things to ourselves, we know we are lying. But our brains are very good at believing two contradictory ideas simultaneously, even when this leads to cognitive dissonance. In existentialism, this behaviour is inauthentic. Existentialism also requires us to be honest with other people. In particular, you should act in such a way as to not impinge on their freedoms. In this sense, freedom is distinct from liberty, though you obviously shouldn't impinge on that either. Freedom in this context means interfering with other people's ability to make their own authentic choices. So, existentialism is partly about honesty, both with yourself and others. Some existentialists would maintain that lying to yourself is impossible because you know everything that is going on in your own mind and it's therefore impossible to deceive oneself. However, I have experienced self-deception countless times, as I'm sure everyone listening has. In my view of bad faith as a psychological phenomena, we are aware that we are lying to ourselves, but force ourselves into a state of denial about that awareness and pretend to ourselves that we are not lying. I think we also do this when lying to other people, producing cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is the psychological theory founded in 1957 by Leon Festinger. He proposed that we have a natural drive towards cognitive harmony, a consistency among all our thoughts and beliefs. When evidence arises which contradicts a firmly held belief or opinion, we will skew the evidence or misrepresent it in order to hold on to our belief and avoid cognitive dissonance, the unpleasant state of tension arising from holding contradictory ideas simultaneously. It is my contention that this is a deeply existential phenomena and that we often use bad faith to avoid experiencing cognitive dissonance. One good example of this is one that Festinger himself invoked at the time, that of doomsday cults. There are plenty of people who predict the end of the world on a certain date, and then, when that day comes and goes and nothing happens, will go through the most extraordinary mental contortions to explain away the contradiction. The world didn't end because we all prayed hard and God saved us. Or, a very popular one, I got the maths wrong and the real date is next year. And I remember hearing or reading about one cult leader who has done this on at least three occasions, and there are still people who follow him. Such is the wonder of the human mind. Anyway, I'm sure you can all think of examples where you have observed yourself or someone else going through these mental contortions in order to avoid cognitive dissonance. When I have failed at something, I will often pretend that I didn't want to do it anyway, and therefore that the failure is of no consequence. Or I will blame some external factor for my failure, so I can pretend that the failure was out of my control. Anything but facing up to the failure and experiencing the cognitive dissonance arising from the discrepancy between my ambition and my reality. I know that I'm lying to myself, so I lie to myself about the lying. More bad faith, more cognitive dissonance. So, part of being an existentialist is to be both realistic and practical about one's ambitions and abilities, and also honest about acknowledging one's failures. An existentialist would not get angry or self-flagellating about a failure. They would merely accept it as another of life's experiences and move on without judgment. That is, without feeling shame or guilt, which are entirely counterproductive. When you fail at something, you either address it or move on. Attaching emotion to it is pointless and something that we choose to do. This is why being a true existentialist is so bloody hard, and why, even though I've been studying this stuff for 25 years, I have still in recent years had some awful times because I don't practice what I preach. But I'm not preaching. But I don't practice what I am currently talking about. It requires an almost superhuman control of our emotions, thoughts, and behaviour. However, even being a bit of an existentialist in some areas of your life can reap huge rewards. It certainly in recent times helped me achieve a level of calm I've rarely experienced before. Negative experiences rarely last long in the context of your whole life. What takes up the most time and makes us anxious or depressed is often not the negative event itself, but the disproportionate amount of dwelling upon it that we choose to indulge in. And it is an indulgence, it's unnecessary. When an event has passed, if it's no longer relevant, there's no need to think about it. And I know you will be screaming at, not the radio, but whatever device you're listening to this through, you'll be screaming, how can he possibly say that? Believe me, I know how hard it is, but with practice and patience, you can do it. One habit I'm still trying to break is belittling myself in front of others, especially new people that I've just met. I am being inauthentic and giving a false picture of myself, probably as a defense mechanism. If I just get the self-criticism in first, then it leaves no room for anyone else to criticize me. What I'm doing, of course, is alienating myself. And we'll deal more with alienation in the next episode, when we conclude our look at social interaction and existentialism. And there we are. That be the end of this be episode 12 of the podcast episode. Hope you've enjoyed that. Hope it wasn't, didn't sound kind of too academic or preachy. If it did, then that is my fault rather than the fault of the subject matter. I basically write these things out like essays and then say other things that occur to me at the time. Maybe that's not the best way of doing it, but it's my way. And I've had a few messages from people saying they like the podcast, so I can't be doing it. It's all wrong. And there's another message now. No, it isn't. That's a text, and I've not got a text from listeners of the episode because that would be a bit creepy. It would be creepy if I had given my personal phone number to people who said I like your podcast. It would also be creepy if someone listening to this had somehow found out my mobile number. Anyway, so that's the end of episode 12 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. Hope you're still feeling positive and hope you're still alive. Sorry, it's been a long day. And I've moved a lot of furniture about today, and I think maybe all the dust has sort of, I don't know, got in my brain and made me a bit giddy. So instead of going into the usual spiel about please, go and to my website and buy me books and that, I'll just say marcusfreestone.com. That's all. See you next time. Goodbye.